Good morning and welcome to our program, Our American Heritage. I am Mark Hunter, the host of the program. Our American Heritage is a program where we explore in depth the American experience from its beginning and to the present. And today we want to share some information and some literature to our listeners about Benedict Arnold. And most Americans are very familiar with the name Benedict Arnold. And for most of American history, the name Benedict Arnold is synonymous with traitor. And yet very few people understand that how good of a general Benedict Arnold was for part of the American Revolution. And unfortunately, he made the wrong decisions and had the wrong viewpoint, and how he ended up his life after making some serious decisions caused Benedict Arnold to have a very tragic life from, well, I would say most of the American Revolution, from personally what happened to him and physically what happened to him and his family, and then his decisions that he made to decide that he no longer wanted to support the American Revolution. Throughout American history, we have seen many different people, and many is not a lot, but enough people to realize that the far majority of Americans throughout our history has remained loyal to our country during time of peace, during time of war. And even though today we're oftentimes one political viewpoint accuses the other political viewpoint or other political viewpoints to be treasonous to their country, most of that is actually a political viewpoint, which is, unfortunately, we see that far too often today. And yet, if we look back, particularly in the American Revolution, we now know and are comfortable that even though Benedict Arnold is the most infamous traitor of the American Revolution, we are now, after many years of research and primary sources and the writings of John Andre and General Thomas Gage and William Howe, General William Howe, we are now absolutely convinced that even today that we can look back and see Dr. Benjamin Church, who was a physician in Boston during the siege of Boston and Lexington and Concord, he actually was a traitor to the American Revolution because he was feeding information to the British High Command during particularly the siege of Boston and even before at the Lexington and Concord. And he was well-known in Boston. He was a well-respected, well-loved physician in Boston, as was Dr. Joseph Warren. But the information that we've now been able to read, fairly recently, within the last couple of years, we've been able to read a lot of Thomas Gage's diaries from the libraries in London. We see Benjamin Church oftentimes mentioned throughout a lot of those diaries, giving Thomas Gage, General Thomas Gage, a lot of information about what was going on with the militias, the patriots inside Boston, and actually what was going on with the militias and planning outside of Boston. So here was a man that was well-liked, well-loved, well-respected in Boston as a great physician, a wonderful person, and yet he eventually decided that it was better opportunity for him to give Thomas Gage information about the Sons of Liberty inside of Boston and the militias that were now surrounding Boston, and giving him Thomas Gage information, thinking that that would help the cause, which obviously it did not. So we see that from Dr. Benjamin Church. Another traitor that we suspected became a traitor, and now that we're confirmed with Christian McBurney's book, Washington's Nemesis, the documentation that he has in his book about General Charles Lee and what Charles Lee did. And if you're familiar with Charles Lee, he was in the British military for many years of his life, came to America, gave up his military career in the British military, came to America. Eventually, he joined the American Revolution. He was actually one of General Washington's aides-de-camp for a while during the siege of Boston. And he took on the role of either Brigadier General and then Major General during the American Revolution. And his behavior was quite unique, and I would say quite quirky oftentimes. During the siege of Boston, Charles Lee had a tendency not to bathe very often and not to be very clean. And oftentimes the soldiers said that wherever Charles Lee went, a whole horde of gnats and flies would surround him because he wasn't that cleanly as a person. He also loved dogs. He absolutely loved dogs and had a lot of dogs around him most of the time. And even one time when John and Abigail Adams came to visit his headquarters, and it's called Hobgoblin Hill. He named his headquarters outside of Dorchester Heights. He actually wanted Abigail Adams to kiss the head of one of his dogs before he would talk to John Adams. And he wasn't all that interested in actually going toe-to-toe militarily with his former comrades in the British military, though Washington made him a general. And then when Charles Lee was captured with the battles of New York, and as he was trying to get away from New York, Charles Lee was captured, and he was a prisoner of war for about 10 months in New York City. And in a prisoner exchange, he came back to the Continental Army when Washington was at Valley Forge. But now we have, because of the research of Christian McBurney, we have documentation that when Charles Lee was a prisoner of war, he was actually giving information and writing information to General William Howe in New York City about the Continental Army, troop movements, different personalities, what possibly was happening with the troop movement and what was going on with the higher command of the Continental Army. And that was primarily during the winter encampment at Valley Forge. And then when Charles Lee was exchanged and came to Valley Forge, Washington had to elevate him in command because he was one of the more senior generals, officers. And then when the Monmouth County Courthouse, Charles Lee was the leading general, which turned into a major debacle on many different levels, whether one of it was a lack of communication, a lack of understanding. Colonel Howard withdrew his troops, but we don't really see Charles Lee 100% in favor of the battle at Monmouth County Courthouse. And he actually tried to convince Washington not to do it. And then he was relieved of command at Monmouth County Courthouse and sent to the back of the lines. And Charles Lee then started to claim that he actually was the one who saved the Continental Army, as Washington told him to be rear guard command, which he did. But from that point on, Charles Lee was pretty much done with the Continental Army. Particularly, he no longer had the trust of George Washington. And today, we now know, because of the writings and William Howe's diaries and what we have of his writings, what Charles Lee was doing to help the British command, the higher command in New York City, while he was a prisoner of war, thinking that if this war was over, he might be looked at more favorably by the British command, or possibly being rehired in the British Army. But Charles Lee, even though if he wasn't all that sold out to the American Revolution, is one thing, but to sell out the Continental Army and give the British Army that you were supposedly fighting against information about the army that you were hired to serve is absolutely treasonous. So we have Charles Lee, we have Benjamin Church, and then we have Benedict Arnold. And as I said, Benedict Arnold is the most infamous traitor in American history, and his name is synonymous today with the idea of being a traitor. And so we hear his name quite a bit. Well, you're nothing, or that person is nothing but a Benedict Arnold. And it's immediately thought of being a traitor. And one of the tragedies that we see with Benedict Arnold is here is a man who, for the first part of the American Revolution, was no doubt the best general, fighting general that George Washington had. And Washington one time called him the Caesar of the Continental Army. Continental Congress labeled him the Hannibal of the Continental Army. Congress actually passed legislation to have two medals forged in his honor after his military victories at different locations, particularly in the war in the North. And so Congress also believed and said with a commendation that he was the most courageous soldier in the Continental Army in 1777. But it was soon after that that we begin to see the quick demise of Benedict Arnold, even though when you look at Arnold and you look at what happened to him, you could see that Arnold began to turn away from the American Revolution in slow turns. And there's reasons why Benedict Arnold became embittered. There's reasons why Benedict Arnold became angry with Congress and the Continental Army and those situations. But that still does not justify what Arnold did to supposedly one, or he was going to give up West Point, and actually he was also going to give up George Washington to the British Army. So if we look at Benedict Arnold's life, and I have not wavered, but I've changed my mind over time about what were Benedict Arnold's motivations? What caused Benedict Arnold to do what he did, both as a young man and a businessman, and then as an officer in the Continental Army? What was Arnold's motivation? And then ultimately, what were his motivations in becoming a traitor and turning his back on the Continental cause? And when we look back on Arnold's life, and we look what happened to Arnold as a virtual young man, as a young person, and then in his teenage years, I am now firmly convinced at this point in time that Arnold's motivation throughout his life was money. How much money could he earn? How much money could he keep? What could he earn? And figuring out a lot of different ways to earn money as a business person and then as a general. And Arnold was one of those people that I'm sure we all know, that Arnold was a person who would just stay right inside the law and do things and earn money as a general, as windfalls during that. A lot of generals were allowed to do, but he would do things that were just inside the law. And you weren't quite sure whether the things that Arnold was doing as a general to earn money for himself and get spoils of war, whether it was really legal or not. So technically, things that he did, it might be legal, but it wasn't moral. It didn't look good for a lot of the things he did. So actually, you know, Arnold was court-martialed twice. And during this time period, court-martial was not that uncommon. But he was court-martialed twice. And I know at least the second time, it was because of money he was earning and what he was doing when he became the military governor in Philadelphia after the British left. And when he was military governor in Philadelphia, what he was doing to get windfalls and rebates for himself using the Continental Army and the wagons of the Continental Army as we get into this. So if we look back and we look at the Arnold family, you know, Arnold was born in Norwich, Connecticut. He's from Connecticut. There's a long line of legacy in Arnold's life. Arnold's great-grandfather was the first governor of the colony of Rhode Island. And so the Arnold name was well-known and well-respected in particularly Rhode Island. Benedict Arnold's father was a very successful businessman in his early life. Benedict Arnold had several siblings, and they were well off enough where Ben Arnold was able to go to private school when he was a young man. And it was sometime around when Arnold was 12, maybe 13 years old, two of his siblings died. And it really caused a traumatic time in his father's life, where his father began drinking quite a bit as he lost two of his children. He began to gamble quite a bit. And ultimately, Arnold's father lost all of his money. And he lost his business. And the Arnold family was now disgraced and virtually living day to day within the Arnold family after having this wonderful background, this legacy of a family. The father was a well-known businessman living a very, very lavish life, and it's just gone. It's just gone. So Arnold had to drop out of private school, which was absolute embarrassment to him and particularly his mother. And then at age 14, Benedict Arnold's mother knew that he no longer had schooling. So his mother was able to contact one of the cousins and got an apprenticeship for Benedict Arnold in the cousin's apothecary and general merchandise store. And so this is where we begin to see Arnold beginning to be trained as a young business person and beginning to see what he could do to earn a tremendous amount of money. So what happened to his father, what happened to the Arnold family because of the father would never happen to him for the rest of his life. And then you're going to see also some other reasons why I believe now that Arnold's whole motivation was money throughout his life. Well, after 7 years of an apprenticeship with his cousin's store, an apothecary and general merchandise store, Arnold decided that he wanted to enlist in the provincial militia. And he was 15 years old. And again, because you're in the militia, you're well known, you're recognized, you're doing something, you're showing a lot of people around you that what you believe you're taking seriously. But that was at age 15, and that was during the French and Indian War. So the provincial militia in Rhode Island, Arnold was 15, and he tried to enlist in the provincial militia, but his mother refused to let him enlist because he was 15. So that was an embarrassment also to Arnold as a 15-year-old, mother refusing to sign that he could join the militia. But in 2 years, when Arnold was a little over 16, because now he was old enough, Arnold enlisted in the Connecticut militia. So he was now old enough. He waited out till he was 16, a little over 16 years old, and Arnold enlisted in the militia, the Connecticut militia. And so during 1757, French and Indian War, there was the French in New York had besieged Albany, besieged Lake George. They besieged and took Fort William Henry. The Connecticut militia decided that they were going to go and help the British in New York. So Arnold's company started off out of Connecticut to go down into the Mohawk Valley to help the British fight the French and Indians in the Mohawk Valley. Well, after Arnold's company heard what was going on in Lake George and Albany and what was going on there, Arnold's company turned around and they went back to Connecticut. So they were not even ever involved in any fighting or seeing any fighting at all. And when they got back to Connecticut, that militia dispensed. So Arnold was only in the Connecticut militia for 13 days. So Arnold never saw any military activity at all. And after 13 days, they dispersed and they all went on their way. After his apprenticeship was over, and when Arnold was 21 years old, Arnold decided he was going to establish his own business. And so he opened up a pharmacy or apothecary, and he didn't want to go into general merchandise at that time. Merchandise didn't interest him because apothecary was much more financially rewarding. He also opened up a bookstore. So his apothecary, his drugstore, not only sold drugs, but he made the drugs. He also had a bookstore together. It's almost like a general store. After about a year, Arnold was very successful with his own business. And a few years before, because of the father's drinking and gambling, his family lost the farm. With the farm that Arnold was raised on, they lost the farm. And after a little bit into a year of Arnold's own business, he repurchased the family farm. He bought it back. Now, the family was no longer living on it. Arnold held on to it for about a year, and then he resold it. So he did what a lot of realtors do today. They buy houses and they fix them up and they resell them. So Arnold made a tremendous profit buying the old family farm and then holding on to it for a little over a year and then selling it for a great profit. And this is now where we're beginning to see Arnold's love for money and the motivation here. He took on a business partner, Adam Babcock, and between the two of them, they bought three trading ships. And for the purpose of getting goods back from the West Indies, the Caribbean, and bringing goods up from the West Indies to sell in the Boston area, export import. And then he took a lot of goods from the Boston area, the Connecticut area, down into the West Indies. So this was very profitable. So Arnold, with a partner, not only did he own a pharmacy or apothecary and a bookstore, Arnold was now a well-established businessman making a lot of money at age 23, 24 years old. What hurt Arnold's businesses a tremendous amount was all the different British acts, the Tea Act, the Townsend Act, the Sugar Act, the Stamp Act, the Quartering Act. This really hurt a lot of Arnold's businesses along the way. And financially, he lost a lot of money. And this is where we first see Arnold began to do a lot of illegal smuggling up and down the coastline to continue to make money. And then also, this is where we see Arnold joining the Sons of Liberty. And from what I read and from what I understand is Arnold's motivation was not necessarily to fight for freedom and fight for representation, but Arnold joined the Sons of Liberty so he could get away from the British acts, get rid of those, so he could still become very profitable in his own life. He married in 1767. He married Margaret Mansfield. They had three children together. And so Arnold is well established now as a family man and a businessman. In March of 1775, Arnold was elected captain of the Connecticut militia. And then the Connecticut militia, or the Massachusetts Committee of Safety, asked Arnold if he would go to Fort Ticonderoga, help take Fort Ticonderoga, and get the cannons so Washington could get those cannons back at Dorchester Heights. And so Arnold goes to Fort Ticonderoga, and I'm sure, hopefully you're familiar with how Fort Ticonderoga was taken by Arnold and Ethan Allen and how that fort was taken. But it's during that time when Arnold is away at Fort Ticonderoga, Arnold's wife, Margaret, dies. She dies from, I believe, typhus. She dies when Arnold was away. So Arnold now is a widow. He has three young children. He needs still to run this business. So his sister, Hannah took over running Arnold's businesses and taking care of the three children. So at this point, we have Arnold, who helped take Fort Ticonderoga with Ethan Allen. His wife had died. And Arnold now has his sister, Hannah, who was now running his household for him, taking care of his three children and running his businesses for him while Arnold is away at this point. So now we begin to see the Arnold's necessity in his life to, he wants to be elevated in command. He absolutely wants to be elevated in command. Arnold is well known, obviously, in the area as a business person and a family background. So Arnold really, really wanted to be a general in the Continental Army to elevate himself. Second Continental Congress during the siege of Boston told the Massachusetts Committee of Safety and Washington that they wanted to invade Canada and have an invasion of Canada. And that's where we see now Arnold leadership as a general at this point. So we're going to pick it up in our next show with Arnold's the attack on Canada and from Montreal and then Quebec. And then we're going to see what's happening to Arnold from that point on. So at this point, we see Arnold as a young businessman who is a widow, who has three children, who has a sister running his business for him and running his household. And Arnold is now on his way to Quebec. So we're going to pick it up that there in our next show. This is WFYL 1180 AM, working for your liberty.